Good morning, it's Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle, and it's Monday, February the 25th, 2019. It's actually a nice day outside in Seattle. It's a big blue sky. Big old Seattle blue sky. There aren't any, there's no evidence of geoengineering that's obvious today, but oh, that's another dark topic. I will say this about Dane Wigington. I do think the guy is brilliant. I do think he's a real decent guy. I think he's completely sincere. And I think he is, uncovering a topic around geoengineering. So if you don't know who Dane Wigington is, he has some YouTube stuff out there, and if you've never watched it, it can be kind of dark. That's a nice way of putting it. Y'all think I'm dark? Holy fuck. Listen to some Dane Wigington sometime. If you think you're in too good a mood and you need to engage the Lovecraftian, inertial motion power unit, or engage it, whatever. If you need a little bit of darkness, just listen to that guy. But by the same token, I think he's sincere, and I think he is identifying something real. It's part of what makes it scary. And you listen, I truly don't know how to help with something like that. I don't want to go into it right now, but it is related to the topic of today. I'm doing a better job of that. I'm trying not to be too stream of conscious, But anyway, it is related. And it is a subject I've discussed because, as a kind of hobo philosopher, I have a particular interest in the way people see the world. And the topic, or rather, I should say, the title of today's podcast is Agnostic. Cosmology. If someone were to say to me, Dan, what do you believe about the nature of the universe in scientific terms? And I'd have to say, well, I'm open to a lot of perspectives. I like to see evidence. I like to see the experiment. It has to make sense to me. It can't sound crazy or too crazy. But then again, I might not be a super genius, so maybe I don't understand every single crazy experiment. That is also possible, right? And I don't think I am. So yeah, I always have to accept the possibility that I'm simply wrong. But fundamentally, I'm a late adopter on most things. If you say, what do you mean late adopter? Well, I'll tell you this. I didn't have sex till I was 30, okay? And it's not because I didn't want to. It's just that when I was looking around trying to figure out my life, yeah, maybe there were a few times where I could have had some easy sex, but I just never really considered sex easy. I thought it was going to be enjoyable, and it was, and I thought it was going to connect people, and that's true. But if you're actually not a total piece of shit, there's nothing easy about sex. Let's just be honest about it. That's pretty intimate. That's the kind of intimacy, if you read the Old Testament, where yeah, they can stick a knife in you. And that's the point. That may be a literal thing, like, hey, someone might kill you in bed, but figuratively speaking, people put their intimacy on the table through sex. So yeah. I was a late adopter to sex. I was a late adopter to mobile phones. I got my first mobile phone when I was 30, basically. 30, I think 31. It was right after 9/11. I think it was October 9/11. I was looking for work. Actually, November 9/11, probably. No, I should say November. Why do I say 9/11? Because that's a big date, man. I accidentally said just 9/11. November 9/11, because it's almost like AD now. AD after the death of Christ or whatever, or AE or BC. It's a marker, anyways. November 2001. I think I got my first mobile phone. I was 31 years old. Very close to 32. And so yeah, I'm a late adopter. If cryptocurrencies in general, if the blockchain in general turns out to be a good way, a solid way, a deterministic way, a fast way to conduct commerce, I'm going to be there. Okay, and maybe I'll miss out on the particular coin that makes billions, who knows? But if it turns out to be the good thing and it works, I'll probably be there. I'm not a big fan of something being public forever, but I don't know. I can get smart about how I do things. So if crypto ends up being real, maybe there is a way for us to maintain some privacy around it. Actually, I just had an idea about pseudo wallets. I don't know. Maybe my friend from crypto world can talk about that next, a pseudo wallet. But there might be a way, and it might already be people doing it, a way to make the blockchain private. So even I would be okay. But the point is, I'm a late adopter, okay? And I'm drinking my coffee right now, so be patient. Ah, that's so good. So good to have coffee. So thankful to the Lord in heaven for the coffee. I am. It really does come from my sister. My sister, a really cool sibling, comes from her, amongst other things. Here's a person, and I guess I've given you some evidence of this person, but this is a person who, her and her family, big reason why I didn't existentially drown the last year. My sister in Seattle. Now, I say my sister in Seattle, that doesn't really help you because I've got a few sisters, so it's not really, you got to do more work. It's not really de-anonymized. It's still anonymized. But yeah, got some coffee. I am a late adopter. If something turns out to be a good idea, I'll admit this. It's one of the great errors of my existence, I suppose. I was a late adopter to computers. Listen, I didn't start programming a computer till I was 30. I was a humanities geek in my 20s, and frankly, when I first encountered the internet as a phenomena in my mid 20s, when I was working on my dis my not my dissertation, but my master's thesis. And yeah, I was using the internet a little bit, and it was like, okay, this is okay, but I don't, I see, so I actually saw things I thought were wrong. Like, to me, I could see already. Even though I was still technically an atheist back then, I could see a kind of darkness to it. It was like, this doesn't seem right. There's something breaking down here. It's like, yeah, it's great to have this internet, but what are we doing to each other? And this was the mid-90s. This is before anything like social media bullshit. Or obviously the smartphone, smart device, whatever. So I'm a late adopter, and I don't know. Maybe that makes me a terrible person. I do believe that there are cool technologies, and I do believe there are things people do that are cool, but I prefer to see most of the crowd go in first on a lot of things. And that means, yeah, I miss out on being first. Big deal. Big deal. If it's really a sound thing, I'll do it. If it's really a bubble, listen, I don't feel bad about missing out on bubbles. Like, oh, I could have made a lot of money in that housing bubble. No, that's not how my brain works. I thank God I didn't put myself into that particular, ethical trap. So yeah, I didn't make a lot of money and maybe I lost out, but there's more to this life than just money, and there is evil in the world. And if you want to be on the right path, you kind of have to avoid it. So I'm a late adopter, and this also applies to the way I see the world. If you tell me, Dan, my guru talked to me last night. Dan, my guru, talked to me last night. He is the existential Buddhist of the Transuniversal One, and he has a little ministry temple over in Kirkland, right? And just go across the fucking Lake Washington to Kirkland to my guru's ministry, Transcendental Observational Integrational Center. And you know what? He said the universe is a giant, bunghole, a giant asshole, and everything was pooped out of it. And that's what we are. We're poop. So we shouldn't beat up on ourselves because everybody's poop. It's not everybody poops, it's everybody's just crap. And that's okay. That's what my guru said. Listen, here's the deal. I am cosmologically agnostic with one exception. I'm also a Christian. So if you tell me that there's a universal bunghole, I'm probably not going to buy into that because that doesn't even remotely fit with what could fit with being a Christian. I'm sorry. Your guru's bullshit. I'm sorry. Although I just essentially proved the guru's point, and that's yeah, I don't know. There is no cosmic bunghole. Though I do think sometimes, yeah, up there on Broadway, there's a lot going on up there on Broadway, but there is no cosmic bunghole. If there is not a bar yet on Broadway called the Cosmic Bunghole, my bet is that it will exist within about 45 seconds. That's how good a name for a bar on Broadway that would be. That would be the best name for a bar, the Cosmic Bunghole. Anyways, there isn't one. That's not where you come from besides. But I am cosmologically agnostic to some extent. I will listen to a crazy idea. Listen, if a Nazi buys me a beer at a bar, and I know you think I'm telling a joke here, but if a Nazi And I'm getting a buzz here. So I was on topic, but I got a call, and the phone is a demon. And yes, the phone is a demon. The phone and the French bulldog have far more in common than not. At this point in human history, if you want to understand the nature of your smart device, spend a week with a French bulldog. Those creatures, they were engineered by people. Listen, there is God in every dog. I think dogs are wonderful. I think Akitas are wonderful. I like German Shepherds. I love retrievers. There are dogs with great personalities. Even those little dogs that kill rats, you know what? At least they're killing rats, okay? So there's that. But the French bulldog has no apparent purpose to me except to annoy. And it is, I suppose, a good surrogate for a baby because it has that bleating noise it makes, and it is, from a psychological warfare perspective, nasty as heck. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the French bulldog. That's, as a matter of public record. And yeah, these little phones. But anyways, I am cosmologically agnostic in a lot of ways. It isn't to say I'm not, I believe in science. I believe in actual science. I think that the argument, and I've said this in other podcasts, but the argument people make that the science is settled, listen, read Thomas Kuhn, read The Structure of Scientific Revolutions. He's the one who coined the term paradigm shift. People's paradigm shifts sometimes. You think you're right today, you could be wrong tomorrow. I'm sorry, that's how the universe works in terms of the physics of it, the reality of it. I believe in science with respect to nature. Yes, I do. Okay, God gave us the ability to reason about the world. And also, I think that although in Descartes' Meditations, where Descartes posits the possibility of some evil demon that's confusing us, that's deceiving us, I know that Descartes posits that as like as part of his thought experiment. But he does end up throwing that away. Anyone that believes in God has to accept the fact that God is not a liar. So if physical reality is there, yes, it can be observed. If we're smart enough, we can observe it correctly. I believe that's true. You can have a cosmology of the physical world. Now, of course, ultimately, with someone like me, if you say, okay, who caused that? I would say God. But I am not God, so I don't know how God created everything. He could have created it in any number of ways, and you know what? If you really believe in God, you actually know he could have created it in any number of ways. And I say he, and guess what? If you feel comfortable saying she, I'm okay with that. I am kind of. I'm not really, but I am. I say he because that's how it comes to me from the Bible. Do I know for a fact that God is a man? I don't know. The word father is used a lot. But there's also a lot of this anger between the sexes, and I think that's a load of crap too. There are different ways of looking at Eve in the garden. One way of looking at Eve is as, well, she was just the worker of the devil, and that would be incorrect. In many ways, Eve was courageous, okay? God didn't really say you can't touch that thing, the tree of knowledge. That's not God. Yeah, God would not have put it in the garden if it wasn't supposed to be touched. He more or less said you shouldn't touch it, bad things will happen, but yeah, it's there. The devil's the guy that showed up with the cigarettes and the whiskey and said, "You know what, guys? Let's go touch that thing." That's the reality. But here's the deal: Eve was courageous, so that's another way of looking at it. It is courageous to want to know what's going on. It's also scary, and it is courageous. So there is an, I'm not saying that the original sin wasn't a sin. That's not my point. But we shouldn't just say that it's about sex. It's not about sex or gender in this case, I don't think. But yeah, I say he. And this is the thing. God, the Lord in heaven, can create the universe any way that God wants to. If God wanted to build the universe out of Cheez-It and pizza, if God wanted to make every particle that makes up an atom the shape of a giant, FU, like a man with his middle finger, he could have done that. That would have been awesome if at some point, with an accelerator or a microscope, a scientist was looking down at the smallest particle and saw basically, a hand with a middle finger going, fuck you. God could do that too. I actually don't think that God does stuff precisely like that, but every once in a while, I do think God does that. I think God has a sense of humor. It's a sign of intelligence. And if that's the case, yeah, God has, I look at my life, and one of the easiest ways for me to navigate my pain is to say, well, maybe I'm entertaining. I mean, that is a possibility. Like you say to yourself, how am I still alive? I'm not necessarily the smartest person out there. I'm not the strongest. I'm not the fastest. And this world is a mess, and I have a hard time interacting with it. So how am I still alive? Well, I could say because of the help of others, and that's partly true. But there's more to it than that. So into that gap of knowledge, I currently pour God, and that's my perspective. That's part of my, if I say I'm cosmologically agnostic, and that's true when it comes to the physical world. But when it comes to who created the universe, I know exactly what happened, you know. But God could do it any way that God wants to. There are philosophers who believe that our universe could very likely be a simulation in a computer, that some other civilization built the simulation, and that does sound like a limerick or a poem or a song. Some other civilization built the simulation. Maybe they did. Maybe they did. There are philosophers who think the universe is a simulation. And if God wanted to create it that way, I think God could. God's not a liar. God is going to create something, and he's going to allow you to figure the shit out of it. Like, you can build your microscopes and you can discover things. In fact, I would think that's part of the whole thing, is learning, understanding. But I currently don't have proof of any one strategy. Like, I don't know for certain if we figured it all out. I used to be very sympathetic to the Darwinian theory of natural selection and sort of this random mutation, random recombination of DNA. I have mixed feelings. One thing, we're learning a lot about DNA, and DNA has been way oversimplified in the science journalism and science fiction. DNA used to be kind of thought of, well, a DNA is a program. Well, actually, a computer program is nothing without a computer. DNA is not just a computer program. It is in many ways a computer, but it's more. DNA is a factory. And if you can build one factory, you can build 20. And what if DNA is a factory that can build factories? Then all of a sudden, a lot of things get really crazy, potentially really scary. But DNA is very complex. The stuff that runs DNA and RNA, it's very complex mechanics. I'm not an expert, but the reality is DNA is not what we thought it once was. And although there's still a lot of ignorance about it, frankly, if we use the term junk DNA, then that just shows that there's ignorance still. But there's a lot going on there, and we're learning a lot. The bottom line is this, is that there's a lot in life that doesn't appear to be possible through mutation. When I was in biology, you want to talk cosmology? When I took biology class, the theory of where life came from, like the first form of life, was symbiosis. And symbiosis was this idea, like an old Mickey Rooney movie from the 30s, where he and all the kids, with Judge Harvey's help, put on a show. Well, guys, that was a movie, okay? Symbiosis is based on this idea that if you give complex organic compounds enough time, they will spontaneously organize into more complex things that require cooperation. That in some sense, a really complicated protein molecule and a really complex DNA said, we're all just working and building factories and stuff, but why don't we build a super factory called a cell? Listen, cells are super factories. Cells can produce, more than one, I think more than one kind of thing ultimately, but cells are kind of like super factories. So a cell can do, usually, sometimes I guess, but no, it can produce many types of things. It can maintain its own energy. It can reproduce. Anyways, my point is really this. I was taught symbiosis, and symbiosis makes no sense. This idea that a bunch of chemical compounds decided to put on a show, and that there you have your first cell, and then it split and it worked. It had to fail. Like, if this is all random, at some point symbiosis failed a lot. And the other problem with symbiosis, and I'm sure it's not even the current theory any longer because it really does seem implausible, but the other problem with symbiosis is why doesn't life just keep emerging? Because the junk, the crap, the poop out of the universal bunghole that allows life to exist, that's still around. In fact, we humans, being crafty, we've introduced all kinds of new crap and radioactive material and other types of crap. So yeah, why don't we have spontaneously new organisms just emerging? I know they might not be huge, but why don't we see a lot of single-celled organisms. Now, the counter-argument would be, and here's the counter-argument. Well, Dan, I work at the CDC and I study deep biological theory, and actually, we think there might be organisms still emerging, and maybe some of these viruses and bacteria we see are coming from that. And here's the deal. I'm not going to say that's wrong because, like I said, I'll sit across the table from a Nazi. Okay, I think Nazis are stupid. They're like Marxists. They're stupid. I will sit across the table from a Nazi, especially these days, if he or she will buy me a beer and they can spew their bullshit, because it's not just the buying me of a beer or a cheeseburger. Both would be preferable, but it's also ultimately the curiosity. I am curious about people's strange beliefs about the world. If I am a hobo philosopher, one of my favorite subjects is how we perceive the world, how we process it. You can call it cognition. You can call it metaphysics if you want to, and certainly you can call it epistemology in terms of the theory of learning. But yeah, I'm very curious. I have morbid curiosity about the strange ways people see the world. So even a Nazi, as long as the Nazi promises not to harm anyone and promises not to shoot me, or just sits there and talks the Nazi bullshit, I'll listen to the Nazi bullshit, because frankly, it'll be crazy ass, really disturbing, but potentially funny bullshit. And here's the thing about Nazis. I don't care what bullshit you believe. If you believe crazy shit, fuck, you know what? A lot of people believe crazy shit. What I care about is if you go around hurting people. If you go around arresting people, if you go around forming gangs and kicking someone's ass because they're not what you think they should be, then all of a sudden your Nazi bullshit is being harmful. That pisses me off. Now, will I form a counter army? Probably not. But like I said, if you come to my door, I hope I have the ability to give to you in kind. Violence with violence. I prefer not to go down that road. But frankly, guys, that's part of the message of the Old Testament, too, for being blunt. Anywho, I'll listen to a Nazi because Nazis can be entertaining. I'll listen to a Marxist. I think Marxists, I was almost a Marxist at one point, and certainly when I drifted towards anarchism after I left the military, my first stopping point was syndicalist anarchism, Chomsky and his libertarian socialism bullshit. I love Chomsky, but libertarian socialism is crazy. It's a contradiction. But he had a dream of small communes, and that wasn't bullshit. I mean, I guess, he grew up, I think he was on a kibbutz at one point. So Chomsky was on a kibbutz, a kind of Jewish commune. And so, yeah, there are communes, so I'm not going to beat him up totally. But my point is, Marxism is bullshit, but I'll listen to a Marxist if they buy me a beer and a cheeseburger and promise not to harm people or harm me. I'll sit there, because it's curious bullshit. Hearing how people they'll and then the latest version of Marxism is this fucking Venus Project fucking zeitgeist fucking not Ralph Renè, because that's the Apollo conspiracy. No, but the fucking guy with the French name who was an expert in everything and said that we can have a completely planned economy, and all it takes is ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning. And I've worked around ERP, so I'm not sure that he completely understood the thing he was a genius about. But yeah, it's a claim to have solved the calculation problem in economics, which I'm sorry, no one solved that. But I'll sit there and listen to Venus Project bullshit. I will listen to it and I will be entertained. I will be entertained, probably. So when I say I'm cosmologically agnostic, it's more of just I try to stay open-minded. And because I'm not a scientist, because I don't do that work, I can't afford, for just reasons of survival, to just say, well, the Bible doesn't talk about what you're doing, so therefore it doesn't exist. That's kind of bullshit too. That's not a good path. So yeah, there are people that believe the universe is a simulation. I don't think it is, but it could be. There are people that believe in the multiverse. I think the multiverse is total bullshit. I will tell you why. For a long time, even once I believed in God, I tried to integrate this multiverse view. And the problem is, I keep getting back to this idea that, you could have a situation, where, for example, something happened one way, but it could have happened another. Like, for example, what if there's a universe where Christ wasn't crucified? Well, that's not the, I don't think the Bible allows that. These covenants between God and the Israelites, they don't make as much sense in a multiverse, because in a multiverse, the Jews do almost everything, God does almost everything. There is no covenant. It's washed away. You could think of it in a lot like monetary debasement. It's kind of like existential debasement. All of a sudden, this life, this one life we have that really is worth a lot, even though it is the physical world, and even though it is probably preparation for something better, this is a pretty amazing life. But then someone comes along and says, Dan, did you know that there's a bazillion copies of you masturbating to different porn stars at the same time? It's like, dude, okay, listen. I've done shrooms, I'll admit this, and I've seen things on shrooms, but I never did see that. That would be messed up. Yeah, I've done shrooms, okay, I'll admit it. Kill me. Yeah, my coffee cup is empty. But the multiverse to me seems to contradict many of the core messages that God relays to us and that can be gleaned from the Bible. So it's hard for me these days to make it work. I don't believe in it. I have met Christians who try to make the multiverse work, and they explain, well, it's so smart and it's so super genius. But the problem is, it does sort of create the situation whereby all these choices we make are irrelevant, because every possible outcome has already been co-opted. And free will, listen, free will in the multiverse isn't that interesting, because along your chain of causality, people can still make the argument, well, that's completely determined. Look at the branching tree, look at the probabilities. All of this is determined, and all of this is this infinite causality universe where everything that can happen will happen. So if you're a Christian and you believe in the multiverse, if you watched that show in the 90s, what, Quantum Leap, okay, that's fine. Listen, and as far as like quantum computers go and quantum dynamics and Heisenberg uncertainty and superposition and Schrodinger's cat, listen, I totally believe that the people that thought about quantum mechanics 100 years ago thought of it in scientific terms, which means they didn't immediately say, oh, holy crap, because of superposition, it's possible that there might be many universes. Schrodinger's cat experiment does not necessarily prove that there's a multiverse. It is a thought experiment. It is about possibility. Here's the thing about a lot of quantum mechanics that's interesting. Once we observe something is when things start to come into focus. Observation often crystallizes perception and outcome and the physics of the world. Well, that's weird, but that makes a lot of sense in terms of how the world probably is. So yeah, I don't believe in the multiverse, but that is another way of looking at things. You got simulation theory, you got the multiverse, you got the guru with the bunghole. Hawking believed that in bubble universes, that there's lots of these little universes that come into existence, and they come into existence all the time. I think Stephen Hawking is still alive, or he's dead. He's one or the other. I mean, there you go. Schrodinger's cat, Schrodinger Stephen Hawking. Let's see if Stephen Hawking is alive or dead. But you see, once you observe it, once I research this on Google, that's it. It's like Schrodinger's cat, man. Is Stephen Hawking alive or dead? Eric Schmidt, tell me. Yep, he's dead. He died. I knew it. He died this last year. He died this last year. It's really sad. 76 years old. Brilliant, brilliant physicist, theoretical physicist, and he wrote The Brief History of Time, of course. And he had a theory about bubble universes, that universes come into existence all the time. And they don't necessarily last that long, but then again, that's a relative thing. Like maybe from the perspective of all the little people in the tiny bubble universe, maybe it did. Maybe there was enough time for poetry. You know what I'm saying? Maybe. You just don't know. That's another cosmology. I don't believe in that one because it also is similar to multiverse. It's like, yeah, that's good, but then are you saying that God has a bazillion universes and we're just that important? Here's the thing. Here's the funny thing about the multiverse theory and the bubble universe theory in Christianity, and specifically the Old Testament. It's hard to use the phrase chosen people if there's an infinite number of chosen peoples. It's all of a sudden, it's like, I don't know. I forget the basketball player. There was this basketball player. It wasn't Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. God, what was his name? I don't want to look it up on Google. I just want to figure it out. But there was this basketball player back in the 70s or 80s, and I think he retired by the 80s, who basically claimed to have sex with like 20,000 women, and maybe he did. Like, it was just holy crap. Let me look that one up too. This is horrible. Horrible. It's on the tip of my tongue, but it's fine. Basketball player. Player. I have to do this with one hand so you know, because I'm holding on to a microphone with the other. NBA sex 20,000. One, two, three. It's on the tip of my tongue, so probably pop. Wilt Chamberlain. Holy fuck, there we go. Wilt Chamberlain. And the thing is, it might not be true because I think that's a lot of women, and I think that that's probably almost impossible to in terms of just survival, because how do you have sex with 20,000 random women and not get killed? How do you do that? I'm not saying women are killers, but they're also not necessarily all about peace and love. And I do think women have a str I think women do have a streak of vengeance in them too. So they're ultimately, yeah, how do you do that? So the problem with the bubble universe theory of our good friend Stephen Hawking and the multiverse is that if you believe in God, then God is like Wilt Chamberlain from a cosmological perspective. God is just, you know what? I created 20,000 chosen people, and you're all equally chosen, and you should all feel really, really great about that. And I'm not really certain if that's the case. I have my own opinion about whether or not God is Wilt Chamberlain. I don't think that God is Wilt Chamberlain. I think that the Israelites were the chosen people. I think there was an Adam and an Eve. It's hard to figure out a lot of Genesis, as I've said before, and others will say, as far as like, well, where did the other kids come from? Where did the community of humans come from? And that is hard. One theory would be is that maybe there was a chosen people at first, but there were other people. I don't know. But it's hard to believe in a chosen people if all of a sudden everybody gets chosen. It's kind of like everyone gets an A. That's the thing about the multiverse and bubble universe theory, is that everyone gets an A. It's like, holy crap, every possible universe can exist and everything's going to be fine, you know? There'll be a unicorn universe and a My Little Pony universe and a universe where the entire reality is like a marathon of Hallmark Christmas movies. You know, those things are terrible. If you ever, I don't have cable TV, but I've had to watch the Hallmark Christmas movies inadvertently because I had to stay with somebody. And they're pretty, yeah, it's sappy, sappy bullshit. It's worse. It's like Frank Capra. Frank Capra had a kid, but the kid got dropped on its head a bit too much. That's a Hallmark Christmas movie, but there might be a universe where everything is like that. It's like, oh, every happy ending, blah, blah, blah. The problem is that that doesn't really jive with the Bible. You know, I don't think that's the case. I think you get chances. I think you get chances and you make choices. And like me, you sometimes choose poorly and there are outcomes and no amount of multiverse bullshittery is going to change that. No amount of bubble universes is going to give you infinite chances. It is easier for me. In fact, even as an atheist, it was easier for me to accept Nietzsche's view of cosmology as a kind of repeating story that repeats forever. It's easier for me to accept eternal recurrence than it is to accept a lot of this, well, it's a multiverse or it's a bubble universe or it's both. And I used to believe this. I actually had a cosmology. And even after I believed in God, I tried to make this work. Because I figured, well, yeah, but God's just doing stuff at the next level. But it's really not the next level to be Wilt Chamberlain. It really isn't. And really, I don't know how you survive having sex with 20,000 women. That's horrible. I think 10 women, and you're already in that probability domain of one of these women is going to shiv you because people are crazy. And frankly, I don't know how a woman would have sex with. Let's make this gender nonspecific. Let's remove any potential accusation of misogyny. Whether we're talking about men, women, gay, or straight, I don't know how you have sex with 20,000 of anybody and not have one of them eventually, you know, just shiv you, fashion a shiv from a toothbrush, stab you right in the heart. Because that's a lot of broken trust, really. So there's that. You know, when you think about the Wilt Chamberlain and the 20,000, you do have to do that Monte Carlo simulation in your head and figure, you know what, that number might be too fucking big. I think he might be bullshitting, because even David, King David, beloved by God, would not have been that lucky. And David was really a lucky son of a bitch. I mean, listen, you want to be lucky in this life, have God watch your back. David had God watching his back a lot, so. But that doesn't mean we should all make the same kinds of mistakes, right? Anyways, as you can tell, the multiverse stuff is hard for me to integrate with God. But listen, if it turned out to be true, I'd still say yes, and God created that too. God, you know, if they say, well, I've proven bubble universes, Dan, okay, fine. You discovered something about God, and that's cool. But, yeah. Also, it would be a question of how does this impact me? For example, there's a physicist by the name of Michio Kaku, and I know that's a hard name to say. I bet he got beat up a lot as a kid. Yeah. I bet Professor Michio Kaku got beat up a lot, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. If he'd ever been in the military, that's a hard one. That's a hard one to get away with. But yeah, Professor Michio Kaku believes in superstring theory. And he didn't invent it, but superstring theory has been one of these cosmological theories about the deep structure of the universe for a long time. And the idea is that these one-dimensional strings make up everything. So it's a theory of everything. And before we go too far, in the world of cosmology, there's this concept. It's like you can think of it as the holy grail of cosmology. It is the holy grail of cosmology. Physicists, since at least 100 years ago, have been searching for this. It's called the grand unification theory. And the idea is to have a theory in physics that unifies relativity observations with what we know from Newton about gravitation, with quantum mechanics, with, you know, what's sometimes called the standard theory of particle physics, all of it integrated together in one true thing. This is called grand unification theory. So superstring theory is one of these grand unification theories. In theory, if it's proven, yeah. Actually, the stuff they're doing with Higgs boson at the accelerator at CERN is also related to a kind of grand unification theory. It's why they sometimes call the Higgs boson the God particle, you know, the progenitor, the thing from which all things come. And then listen, like I said, I am cosmologically agnostic when it comes to the physical world, because I don't know how God did everything. I am not God. But if you ask me, okay, then what? I would say God still created this. So even if any of these things turn out to be true, all of it still begins for me with God. Just got to get that out of the way. But yeah, grand unification theory is a big thing. And all of these people, whether it's multiverse or bubble universes or Higgs boson splits into everything, creates everything, whatever the theory is, a lot of these people are looking for more than just another explanation. They want to explain everything. That's why theory of everything is kind of part of these conversations. We want a theory of why everything came along, everything you observe, all of physical reality, where did it come from? That's cosmology. And a theory that explains it all would be a grand unification theory, GUT. Superstring theory is one of those theories. I'm no expert on it. I kind of gave you some explanation. You know, it does have to do with a kind of multi-dimensional universe. But in this context, dimension doesn't mean multiverse dimensions. It doesn't mean like Earth 1, Earth 2. It doesn't mean causality. It means structure. It means the way things are organized. So superstring theory is multidimensional in terms of how stuff is organized together. And again, I'm no expert. This is what I basically gleaned from listening to Professor Michio Kaku talk about it. I've read a little online about it. I've read a few articles here and there. I think I once cracked open a book on the subject, but I'm not really into it. I don't think it doesn't apparently have anything about it that conflicts with, you know, faith in God. So it's not like I would say, well, there's no way. It's not like the multiverse or bubble universes. It doesn't really turn God into Wilt Chamberlain. So, and there are people who believe in just the Big Bang, and that's a cosmology, and that's kind of related. Hawking is more advanced than that. I mean, Hawking's bubble universes, you can think of them as lots of Big Bangs that happen forever. We always have universes being created. That's one way of thinking of Hawking. Big Bang is thus the theory that the universe had a moment, and this is related to Higgs boson. You could say that Higgs boson and the Big Bang are connected theoretically. So the Big Bang is the big explosion from which everything came. There was a God particle called Higgs boson, and it decided to put on a show, and you have the Big Bang, and everything is produced from that. Hydrogen coalesces into stars. Stars get old, they explode, they produce new elements, stuff comes together. Life says, "Hey, man, let's put on a show." And then all of a sudden, you have the Mickey Rooney organellas organizing into cells and splitting, blah, 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 blah. That's the Big Bang. And the Big Bang is, in many ways, the most popular cosmology with physicists. And it really, yeah, in many ways, that's what they do a lot of work at CERN. The large accelerator at CERN, the Large Hadron Collider at CERN, big circular accelerator there in Switzerland. Big part of that is studying the Big Bang, or really the, you could say, the state of the universe when the universe began in physical terms. Now, if that's all true, like I said, if there's a Higgs boson, I still say God created it. But again, I don't know for certain these people are correct either. And then there are the crackpots, people who we make fun of, people who we say, well, those people are crazy. There are people out there who believe a lot of science that we're taught is mostly lies. Sometimes they're called flat earthers. And a lot of flat earthers are like this. They think that the history of modern science is a history in part of deception. And I must be blunt. I'm not a flat earther myself, but I do suspect that a lot of the stuff we're taught in school about the nature of the world might be a lie. I cannot prove it. I can't. But I suspect it. There are things, there are inconsistencies. And because I don't want to bore you or piss you off, I would just ask you to think about the inconsistencies of things you're taught and how they just don't make a lot of sense. But again, that doesn't prove anything. But yeah, there are people who believe the Earth is flat. And they have infrared cameras, and they'll say, I shouldn't be able to see this thing I'm seeing. And I haven't tested that. I haven't observed it. So, and I don't think they're evil people. A lot of them say, and also, here's the other thing, the flat earth theory, it does perfectly fit with Christianity, if we're being blunt. I mean, there is plenty of evidence from the way the Hebrews saw the world that they saw it in kind of a dome type reality. And that doesn't mean that's what it is. God, I hope people don't get the wrong idea, because it's like all of a sudden you get blacklisted. It's like, oh my God, Dan believes this. No, I am, when it comes to men, human beings, I am cosmologically agnostic, because we get fed a lot of shit, in my opinion. If you want to know my cosmology of the human world, not the universe, I'm a Christian, I already know how that works. I'm talking about the human world. My cosmology of the human world is quite simple. Satan loves it here, and he's always fucking with us. Human beings are given lots of chances and fail more often than not, and there's a lot of lying going on, especially these days. So, for me to determine what the truth is an exercise in futility sometimes. Because I think we're told stories that are total bullshit. This doesn't imply anything about the nature of the world. It just means that I feel like I am kept, like so many other Americans specifically, but you could say the modern human is kept in the dark. We're treated like mushrooms. We're fed shit and we're kept in the dark. But I cannot prove what the answer is. Like I suspect that we're being lied to, but I don't know what the real truth is. So cosmology for me is partially about that. Like say, basically, my cosmology is that I'm trying to figure out the world to the best of my ability. Currently, I believe in God, but I was an atheist for many years. But even when I was an atheist, my cosmology was this. Listen, tens of thousands of years ago, human beings defined the universe in terms of how far they could walk in a day, more or less. before they were able to take horses and domesticate them, long before that, many tens of thousands of years ago, humans would have defined the universe and how far they can walk in a day. And then things got more complicated and our view of the world changed. But the question is, was it always going to get bigger, or was there going to be a point at which it stops? I believe in God, so it's entirely plausible that this particular human story does not go on forever. Listen, the book of Revelations is spooky. I'm sorry. You know, and frankly, a lot of the prophecy can be spooky. And I don't mean that in a good way or a bad way. I just mean that you can get a little fearful when you read about some of these things. Some of the prophecy of Daniel, some of the stuff that comes out of the Old Testament is spooky. And so when you confront the Bible, especially when it comes to how will things play out, it is very easy to say there is a beginning and there is an end. There is a middle, but there isn't an infinite thing. It doesn't go on forever. You know, the life that we're talking about isn't, and that's another thing too. That's another reason why the multiverse thing is hard for me to accept. Or the infinite time, you know, the infinite number of Big Bangs or any of that crap. Because clearly God has a beginning and an end to the story, and clearly it has a beginning in a certain sense, but also things have greater value. If there's ever only going to be one of something, if there's ever going to be one of you, that's greater value than there being infinite numbers of you. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it works. It's a lot like, you know, actual proper theories of money. I don't mean modern monetary theory. Ugh. I mean actually knowing what money is. Listen, if I have paper money and I keep printing it forever, eventually the money becomes worthless. If I have a version of you and I parallelize it into the gazillion dimensional space of the multiverse, all of a sudden you don't have a lot of value. You could just disappear and it wouldn't matter. You're just a rounding error, really, in the accuracy of the great quantum computer called the simulated universe. Who knows? So if you're a Christian, even simulation theory is an iffy one because it does two things. It says God might be a liar. And listen, I don't think God's a liar. It says that, but it also says this. It says that, well, there could be lots of simulations, Dan. You could just be one Dan running on one process, on one server, in the giant Pornhub quantum computer that the Garzogians log into every night after they're done mining Jimbulus. That could be true. All of that could be true. I don't think it's true. I have no evidence of its truth, but it could be true. So for me to accept the feasibility of a cosmology at this point, but even when I was an atheist to some extent, although I was very sympathetic to eternal recurrence, this idea that these big bangs happen periodically, the universe collapses, the whole thing starts again. I was very sympathetic to that kind of cosmology. The Higgs boson thing is intriguing, and frankly, Nietzsche kind of sold me on eternal recurrence to some extent. But, like I said, as a Christian, I can't even believe that, because ultimately, I do think, you know, human beings are special in the following sense. We come into existence, and there's never going to be another one like you. I'm not saying you're all that great, and I'm also not saying you're not going to piss people off. I'm also not saying you're not going to have a hard life. You could have a miserably hard life. So could I. I you know, things could end badly for everyone. But that doesn't mean there's some extra copy of you and that God is Wilt Chamberlain. So yes, am I willing to listen to strange and crazy ideas about the universe? Of course I am. I try to stay open-minded about that, you know, within reason. So even if I disagree with the multiverse, I'll listen to somebody explain it. I'll say, okay, I that's interesting. And I think that's a good place to be vis-a-vis ideas. Is don't be afraid of ideas. Don't be afraid of words. You can be afraid of people with mallets and machetes and hammers coming at you. That's something to be afraid of. You can be afraid of Ebola. I'm not saying it kills everybody, but it does seem to kill a high percentage. That's worthy of fear. Don't, if someone says, here's a cup of Ebola, I would recommend not drinking it. I think you should be fearful when you get on the highways. There's a lot of crazy people out there driving on them roads. part of my cosmology. One of my rules of Dan's cosmology is the roads are currently filled with crazy people, and maybe they always have been, and they come into existence spontaneously, and they pretty much don't exist until you observe them or hit them. Yeah, there you go. There's my quantum theory of Dan's cosmology of just the roads are fucking dangerous as fuck. There are things to be afraid of in this world, but being afraid of ideas is not a good one. It's not a very courageous one. And, you know, I do think God says, don't touch the unclean thing. But you notice something about God and all the freaking temptations? He doesn't remove them. He doesn't like zap, take away all the cigarettes. Listen, all the temptations in the world are here for a reason. It's part of the game, in a sense, part of the life, part of the test. Part of life, part of what we were given is part of it, period. Doesn't mean we should do everything. Doesn't mean we should let ourselves fall into temptation. But if you don't think those were put there by God, I think you have to check your theory of God. God did all of it, you know. I think I may have said this before, but, you know, God owns Satan. Satan gets to do stuff in the world, but that's only because God probably is using Satan to do that stuff. That's part of the plan. God, you know, Satan doesn't get to win. There is no way in which Satan can win. But it is interesting and intriguing that people and Satan believe they can win. That's part of the I think that's entertaining, and I maybe even entertaining for God. I think it is. It's horrible on a certain level, but it is entertaining. Satan is entertaining, and the people that fall into his bullshit. I'll listen to Satanists. Listen, if a Satanist sits down in front of me and tells me their crazy bullshit about how they're going to like drink whiskey with Satan in hell and everything will be hipster and smoking cigarettes, listen, I want you to know this, that none of that's true, that Satan is lying to you, and that when you get there, it's going to be horrible. And when I say horrible, you have to imagine your worst days. And I've had a few, so I feel like I can gauge hell. You can take those worst days you've ever had on planet Earth and multiply them by 25 quadrillion trillion raised to the trillionth power. And it's going to be more horrible than that. So I'll listen to a crazy-ass theory of the universe. I'll listen to a crazy-ass ideology. I'll listen to it because I am entertained. It is like, in some ways, it's like porno for some people, hearing these crazy ass theories. And I'm not saying that any of the ones specifically were necessarily the worst or whatever. And also, with respect to Flat Earth, I'm not claiming that these people are bad people or crazy. But the bottom line is this, the Flat Earth one, that gets you in a lot of trouble. It's weird because one of my rules of, you know, find out who you can't criticize. And again, that's attributed to Voltaire, but I think it's important. Find out who you cannot criticize in your society, and those are the people in power. Well, I also think there's a corollary to this, and I've mentioned this before. Find out an idea that everyone hates. Everyone is told to hate. Everyone is told to hate constantly, like in the TV shows when they should use the word chaos and they use the word anarchy. They should use the word chaos when shit's catching fire. And if you want a lot of chaos, it really does take a crocodile, aka government. But whenever there's chaos in the movies, it's like, what do you want, anarchy? No, what they should be saying is chaos, and that's not accidental. Find out who everyone hates in terms of ideology, philosophy, theory, cosmology. Find out who everybody hates in any society, and I think you're probably looking at the people who threaten the power. Doesn't mean they're right, doesn't mean they're true, but you probably are looking at a threat to power. It's one of the reasons why Christians are often so hated, because here's the thing, Christianity really doesn't tell you to either have a government or not have a government, but it does tell you what's right and wrong, whether you have a government or not, you know. And there are things you shouldn't do. You shouldn't go around setting people's homes on fire. It's probably not right to do. And it's probably not smart to do. Because eventually they come by your home and they set your home on fire. And that goes on forever. So yeah, you know, cosmology's funny. And yes, thinking about the nature of the universe is fun. And, you know, in some sense, you could say the ultimate cosmology of the disconnected human, the human that is disconnected from God, even ultimately, is solipsism. And we've talked about that before. I've said, and I believe this to kind of be true, many philosophers in the field of metaphysics and study of truth and other things get into a car and try to drive as far away from solipsism as fast as they can, because it's scary. It is very consistent in a way. It's difficult to falsify. It's also difficult to prove. It is a powerful position to be a solipsist, to think that you are the only thing in the universe. Everything else is some type of make-believe bullshit that you cannot prove, but no one else is real but you. It's kind of powerful in its completeness. It's also very lonely and empty. So you could say the ultimate cosmology, the ultimate secular cosmology, is some kind of solipsism. In a way, simulation theory almost is that, except for you're not real in that. Solipsism's more powerful. So anywho, I'm going to leave you guys on this Monday morning, you know. I want to say one other thing, though. I get some emails from people, and I try to respond. In part because I don't have that many people who listen, and I just feel like, why be a jerk? And I do like interacting with a lot of people that I've interacted with so far. So this isn't like a complaint to everybody. But there have been one or two people who will keep emailing, even if I don't respond. And I guess here's what I would say. I tend to email people twice at most to try to get their attention. But if they don't email me back after two or three times, I stop. And if you're saying stuff that might seem crazy to me, I'm probably not going to respond, because I do think there's a lot of creepy stuff going on out there. I don't want to get into gang stalking. To me, that seems probably like a psyop too, in the sense that I'm not sure it's a real thing. I don't know. I think there's a lot of paranoia, and I think the government creates paranoia. But if you're going to send me a bunch of emails with crazy stuff, just be careful, okay? Because I just don't know. You have to be careful. I might block you because I might assume that there's something else going on. This does not apply to everybody. If you've been interacting with me on an email-by-email, message-by-message basis, whether you're, you know who you are, you guys are fine. We're all good. But there's been, at least a couple people who it's like you just don't stop, and then you say some really crazy stuff. I'm sorry. Be careful. Anywho, have a great, great morning, and do keep the emails coming, though, because even the crazy stuff is entertaining. I will tell you straight up, it is. Just be careful, right? And have a great day.